The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
That's a motion device for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuned into Radio Memphis Around the World with me, D, straight up out of Canada. And I tell you what, it is not often that you come across a rock band that is led by a powerhouse of a very young female by the name of Sarah. That's right. You guys, make sure you check that out. That is a family affair because she's got her brother, David. She's also got her sister, Andrea, in along with their cousin, Josh. And they make up one of the most unique rock bands on the planet. And I tell you what, they absolutely jam. So we love spinning them here on Radio Memphis Around the World. Now, speaking of powerhouse females, you guys know, and I've been talking about it, you've seen the logos going around. It is a Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Alert brought to you by Ken Barr Films and Radio Memphis. And this is a series that what we're doing is that we're bringing more insight to the table for our emerging artists and our entertainers by actually sitting down with some of the best industry pros that work behind the scenes. You know, think about that incredible record you just spot, or think about that awesome live show that you just saw, or even the fantastic event that you might have attended. Now, what's even cooler for today is very special for me because I've been doing these interviews and I've been having a fantastic time with all the guys. Today is special because I get to sit down with a very cool lady by the name of Miss Mickey Scott. She's also known as Mrs. Mix. Now, she's got 30 plus years in the music business, having done everything from being an artist herself to working on the set and being a part of a crew for a TV music show, to interning and managing at some of the most iconic recording studios, including Electric Lady Studios, Chicago Tracks, Cherokee Recording Studios, Amigo Recording Studios, and even Lighthouse Recording Studios as well. And of course, juggling and being able to manage an artist's band and a band's career as well. She's done it all. Now, what you may not know about Mickey Scott is that she nearly blew up her chances on the first day of what would be considered her biggest break and stepping stone into the crazy world that we know as the music business. I mean, literally. So with no further ado, what I'm going to do is that we've got a call coming in all the way from the West Coast in California from none other than Miss Mickey Scott herself. How are you doing, sweetheart?
Hey, I'm good. Nice day.
It is so, I'm so glad that we finally get to do this and we get to hang out. And what's even cooler is that we get to do some girl talk about some music business.
Correct.
I love it. We're going to go ahead and just get this in. So how's it going with your day, baby? What you got going on right now?
Oh, well, you know, I told you I had to change my phone because I've been doing war with Comcast.
Oh, nice. And,
you know, it's just you get on the phone with those people and they keep switching you to this person and that person. So my phone was dying.
Uh-oh. And,
yeah, I had to run and give CPR to my phone.
Well, it never ends. It never ends with you. You know, even if it was with your phone, you got to give CPR to it all.
Oh, the phone. It's, you know, sooner or later, they're going to do that. We're going to have those attachments in our brain, you know. And we could just walk around like on Star Trek and just like hit something on our body. And
you know, there's some kind of truth in that statement, and you just scared the crap out of me by saying so. But yeah, you're right.
It's coming. You'll see. It's coming.
Well, I tell you what, baby girl, we, you know, this is part of the Radio Memphis Road Crew radio series, and one of the reasons why we wanted to sit down and have a very fantastic chat with you is just because of all the crazy cool things that you've done, all the crazy cool stories that you have, and you have been behind some very cool stuff, including working with some of the more iconic recording studios, and I have to... What I want to do is I kind of want to backtrack a little bit and give everybody a little insight because you started out, you know, as an artist.
If somebody were to tell me back then that I was not going to be an artist myself, that I was going to be helping other artists make their careers or make their records, I would have said, no, you're crazy in the head. No. It started very, very early, actually, and you want to really go back 3 years old. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. My mom, you know, living vicariously through me, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah, she put me into dance. And so, yeah, at three, it's called baby rhythm.
Okay.
Baby rhythm. And I think the reason that they push you to do that at such a young age is it's not so much, of course, dancing. It's just breaking you in to be away from your mom, you know, for a few hours.
Well, sure.
To not get stage fright.
Ah.
See, they kind of like, yeah.
Okay.
They're molding you. And so that all happened. And I took it very seriously. But by 16, my older brother was in a band.
Okay.
So he had all the equipment pretty much already in our basement. And it just kind of fell into place. And I would just jam with people. And it was so much fun. And then I started taking that a little bit more serious.
Okay.
So by the time I was 18, I did have a band, Relay, out of Brooklyn, New York. We rocked. Opening for Edgar Winter and things like that. It was great. Plus, I became pretty friendly with some of the guys in KISS.
Oh, and how funny.
They really showed me the ropes about not so much them, but like their bodyguards and their crew and all that stuff, and going from city to city with them. And they're not on a tour bus. No. They take jets everywhere.
Oh, of course.
So that was getting a bit expensive for me.
Well, of course.
You know?
Of course.
And I did have a good job working for the Board of Ed, but I just wanted this band to take off. And so I started actually becoming a rockette at Radio City Music Hall.
That is fantastic. And when you told me that, I was like, you became one of the girls that, you know, as little girls, we all were like, oh my God, that's like a dream come
true. Kick one, two.
But it was a dream.
Well,
it was a total dream.
Yeah, it's, believe you me, it's much nicer to be in the audience than it is to be on stage there. And especially when your costumes are falling apart and you don't know what to do, so you're just taking chewing gum and sticking it on a zipper to get you through it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, you got to be inventive in the entertainment business.
Of course.
I couldn't take that, though. But I was getting very serious with this band and of ours. But then I met this guy. I went to an Alice Cooper concert.
Of course.
I saw Alice Cooper flush the fashion right before this Special Forces tour. So, the Savoy Theater. I met Eric backstage, and I did not know who he was. I did not know he was even in the band.
Oh, wow.
Until I saw him on stage. And I said to my friend, that looks like Eric, that guy who got us backstage. Well, sure enough, ever since then, we have been inseparable, and it's been 35 years.
Isn't that amazing?
So that is how I actually, though, got into the music business in Los Angeles, because of Eric.
Eric
and
Scott.
Meeting all of the people from Alice Cooper Entourage and Dan Stevenson. Let's talk about Nice Dan.
Nice Dan.
Dan scared the crap out of just
nice
about
Dan, okay,
everybody.
We got to look. Everybody I've talked to, Mickey, I mean, and I was on the phone. I was actually on the phone with Jeremy Railton this morning, and he actually was really cool about it because he loves Dan, too. But I tell you, everybody I have talked to, man, that's the first thing they tell me. It's like, you do realize they call him Nice Dan, right?
Well, however it came about, there's a little discrepancy between me and Dan Stevenson about how Nice Dan came about. But it did surface around the part of Alice Cooper. You know, that's for sure. And there was a song off of the album, You Better Be Nice. And it went, you better be nice, 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 you better be nice, nice. It was like kind of strictly out of Alice Cooper's demeanor.
Okay.
You know, so we kind of giggled about it. And everybody on that tour was telling everybody, are you nice? You're nice. You're nice. And it was like getting to the point where enough with this nice business. So I remember Dan saying something like, all right, with the nice. And he got so mad about it. And that's how. That was sort of how things started happening with Nice Dan. It went from Rasputin to Nice Dad.
Okay, nobody's ever told me the Rasputin part. All right, so.
No, but listen, Dan, listen, he's the best. He's your guy. He's the best. He doesn't take any crap, you know, from anybody. But, I mean, not like that, but you know what I'm saying. And if it has to be done, it's done. And that's why Dan is Nice Dan. And he's in this business for a very, very long time. And he's the guy to go to. He's a go-to guy.
Well, the funny thing about bringing him up is okay, so we'll backtrack for a second. And for those of you that have tuned in, we're doing a Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series interview, and we are sitting down with the lovely Miss Mickey Scott. You wind up, okay, so you're with Eric, and you know, and you're inseparable, and you know, and it's a beautiful, you know, a beautiful testimony to say that after 35 something years that you guys are still together, married, and wonderful. You wound up for kind of doing some funny things. At first, you were doing lyrics, is that right?
Because
you
were that was just a little tiny side thing. We were up at Alice's just about every day trying to get the new album, Zipper Catch a Skin, together. And he just needed somebody to, he dictated lyrics to me.
I gotcha.
And that's how brilliant this guy is. I mean, you just are sitting there with a pen and a piece of paper, and this guy's just rattling off lyrics.
Wow.
And amazing. It's just like my mouth is still open from it, but that's what he does. So, yes, I had to deal with those lyrics and typing them up for Warner Brothers, which, you know, I made some typos for sure.
At least you learned to
sting before you're stung. You can't learn to stink before you're stunk, and that can't be right. So all these little, you know, stupid things that I'm learning about. But so after that went to bed, Dan Stevenson, and by the way, Dan, I love you. He was actually one of our worst men at our wedding. Okay?
I love it.
Yeah, we don't have best men. We have worst men.
So, of course.
He approached me because of Rock and Roll Tonight on NBC, filmed out of Perkins Palace.
Yes.
And it was going to be the Don Kirshner or the in concert kind of thing, but we were not going to do editing and stuff like that.
Right.
It was going to be in your face kind of a thing.
Sure.
And all of these live bands and big bands too.
Of course.
Also had up and coming bands as well.
Of course.
So he approached me with that and he said, hey, do you want to be quote unquote called a hostess? And I'm like, sure. Yeah, I'll do it. Sounds great. You know,
right.
Perkins Palace in Pasadena, about a half hour away. So that's how we started. The first day I get there, Dan throws me in the snake pit and says, here, this is where you are going to be. Now, it was the parking lot of Perkins Palace, and they had these Winnebagos in there. And they were used as their dressing rooms. The bands that we had on, because we just didn't have enough dressing rooms, and there was so much chaos, you know, going on backstage at Perkins Palace because of the filming and the gear. We figured we'll separate them. Well, okay, I was kind of dealing with these Winnebagos too, and I did not know that I had to drive one of these things. Well, I've driven cars. I never drove a Winnebago before.
it's different, isn't it?
Huh?
I said it's different, isn't it?
It's bulky, yes. And, you know, well, it's not as bad as driving a Vogue. That came later. But, okay, so we had to get them off the lot at Perkins Palace onto the regular lot of where they were rented from. And this was very late at night now. And we were in a caravan on the 170 freeway, going back toward Van Nuys, and I was the last one in the row. There was a van in back of me, which was following us, so that we could all get back into the van, back to Perkins Palace to get our car. Well, all of a sudden, I notice I'm losing power.
Right.
And I stick my hand out the window to jog her by trying to wake her up and say, hey, I've got a problem here.
Wow.
So she just waves back at me and takes off.
That's
crazy. So here I am. Sure enough, it dies. And as I'm there on the side of the road on the freeway, I start hearing a hissing sound.
Oh, my God.
So I said, this can't be good. So sure enough, I start seeing these, like, little sparks coming out of the front of this thing. And I just bolted.
Wow.
And I noticed a ditch, kind of. And I just said, this thing's going to blow. Well, sure enough, it didn't take long, and it ignited. And sure enough, here comes the fire engines, and here comes the police.
So basically, on your first day, you damn near blew up the Winnebago.
I did blow up the Winnebago.
Correction, she blew up the Winnebago. And this is all on your first day. And so, you know, Mickey, what's going through your head? It's like, look, I just got this gig.
What's going through my head is she blew up good. But what am I going to do? And oh my God, this is my first day. Wait till Dan hears this. And ay, ay, ay. And by the time I got home after the reports and everything, we didn't have cell phones back then.
Of course not.
So Eric is worried about me. It's like 3 a.m. Where's my wife? So ever since that, he really didn't like me doing that show.
Mm.
You know? So I really, really kind of had to have Dan do the talking for me, to talk Eric into letting me continue to do it. But, Dan says, don't worry, I'll keep a close eye on her, kind of a thing, you know, babysit me, which of course he didn't. That's all Eric had to hear, so.
Right, of course.
Yeah, anyway, so yes, it turns out, though, it was the fault of GM, okay, just saying.
Wow.
I love it.
We're just going to throw that out there just in case.
Mm-hmm. I don't go around usually blowing things up on my first day.
Of course, that's not
a good way to make a first impression.
Of course not. Of course
you
gotta
not. You got to give me a while to get myself up to that level. So,
that's crazy.
Anyway, that's how it all started. So ever since then, now, unfortunately for all of us, Rock and Roll Tonight didn't last. I think it was only 2 seasons, in fact. And I don't even know if they aired the second season.
Wow. I didn't even realize there was a second season.
You know, I know that there was, because that's when we went, I believe, to the Vogue mobile homes.
Okay.
Which were even bigger.
and you see these things and you're like, well, hell.
I'm rubbing my hands together going, ah, ha, ha. This is going to be even bigger. No. It was, those things were huge. And they did. Those were actually used for events just like this. They were, you know, they were kind of like dressing rooms on wheels. But I don't. Yeah, they even had blenders and stuff, because I remember the guy telling me, you better start breaking this baby at least 3 blocks before the red light.
Wow.
You know, because it's like air brakes.
That's
crazy.
And
it didn't have power steering either.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, I mean, this was something I never did in my life.
Of course not.
But it's an experience.
Of course not. But you know, the funny thing about that show, and you know, and you know, personally, you know, my whole idea behind that show, you know, was brilliant. You know,
yeah,
because everybody was busting out this brand new talent, you know, and you got to remember, you know, thinking about, you know, what was going on between 82, 83, 84, you know, and the
right.
show coming out. And,
right.
you know, and these are bands that, you know, it's captured moments, you know, for them when their stars were rising and stuff. And wasn't the first guest, wasn't it, Billy Squier?
Yes, I believe he was one of the first. I don't know if he was real. See, first of all, I don't think I was there the very first day. I don't think I came in, you know, until a little later, for, you know, because Dan just had to set all of that stuff up first.
Right, right.
And then he needed the people to deal with behind-the-scenes stuff in the parking lot. So,
right.
But in fact, I do now remember. It's coming back to me.
Okay.
He invited us to go and see the first show. And
okay.
I bet you I still have my backstage pass from that.
Of course you do.
I try to keep them all.
Of course you do.
And I think that's what it was. Billy Squier, yes, we came to see him first, and I wanted to be a part of this thing, you know.
I see.
And that's when Dan brought it to my attention. Hey, listen, we need to do this, this, and this. You're interested? So that's how it happened.
Right.
Yeah, so Billy Squier, he was one of the first, but like I said, there was at least 4 bands you know, at one time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
We really punched them out. I mean, but it was great.
Good.
But anyway, after the demise, unfortunately, of that, I started working at Lady Foot Locker.
And the funny thing about all of this, okay, and for those of you who've tuned in, I am talking to the lovely Miss Mickey Scott. You're so sweet and you're so cool, Mickey, about just kind of breezing over the fact that, you know, okay, you're going to work with Lady Foot Locker, you know, and this was so that you can keep calm and, you know, and keep your peace and, you know, and keep money coming into the house, you know, and this kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I was bored.
Okay.
I mean, and we made a little bit of a deal when Eric and I got married, and it is true. There's not going to be two musicians, working musicians, in the family, because it will never work. And Eric had dated some actresses before me, and sure enough, you know, they're out on site, they're gone, he's gone a lot on tour, and yeah, it ships passing in the night, it just doesn't work.
I got you.
And, yeah, you know, it was getting to kind of time maybe to get a little grounded, you know, so that's why I gave up my New York contingency situation. I did that on my own. Nobody talked me into that.
Okay.
I know my band members were very oinky about
course.
It, but
of course.
I mean, I gave them the trademark. I gave them the copyright of you know, everything that was owned, and I told them, please continue. Well, the first gig that they had at CBGB's, the singer never showed up. So, you know, you can't blame me, okay? But, so, yeah, Lady Foot Locker.
Which is a complete opposite end of the spectrum of everything you've ever been, you know, doing at this point in time.
Just when you think I'm going to say something, you know, you never know. That's what gets me into trouble. But this is, it was known as a manager is needed for the store. Okay?
All right.
I mean, I just didn't walk in a Lady Foot Locker and go, hey, can I, like, work here?
Well, no, that wasn't unheard of to do that either, but okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't have. Believe me, I wouldn't have. But it turned out, once I did the paperwork and so forth, guess what? That's exactly what it was.
Oh, wow.
You know, you were a lackey.
Okay.
I hate to say the word, but that's what you were.
Okay.
And you had to work your way up. And I don't need this. So here I am in the mall in Northridge, driving there and the hours were goofy. So I'm putting sneakers on old ladies' feet, okay, so that they can walk around the mall. And there has to be something better than this.
Of course,
right?
There is, because I mean, Mickey, think about it. All right, just a few minutes that we've been on the phone. You know, we've talked about everything about you being in a rock band, you know, hanging out in some studios, to you being a rockette, to you being part of a, you know, rock and roll TV show for music and stuff. And now, all right, this is like Cinderella. You know what I mean? You're sitting at a Foot Locker and you're putting, you know, shoes.
I never thought about that. You know?
Yes.
You're right. It does. It sounds like a Cinderella story.
It does. So,
it's true.
So
it's
continue.
Funny.
So,
yeah.
So you
so,
have
yeah,
this thing.
Here I am. Yep. I'm not kidding, elderly women came in with bunions and, you know, all this stuff on their feet, and they have, like, their little prescription from their doctor, their therapist.
Oh.
You know, so I'm trying to fit their bunions and stuff to their knees. I couldn't take it anymore.
Okay.
And the one thing that really set it off, one morning I'm going to work on the freeway, and we had an earthquake.
Oh.
And I just saw the whole freeway buckling.
Oh, wow.
That's when I said, I can't do this anymore. And I told Eric, and he said to me, I can't believe you did it for as long as you did.
He was trying to see how long you'd go.
I think they took bets behind my back on how long I could do this without setting that place on fire.
So now it's a thing. Wherever we put her, we're going to see how long it takes for her to destroy it.
Exactly. And I was about ready, but I figured Mother Nature was doing that for me with the earthquake, so I didn't have to worry, you know. So I came home, I turned that car around, and plus I was borrowing a car from somebody. So I turned the car around, got home, and I said to Eric, I can't do this anymore. And he said, thank God. Oh, my God.
What and a so, gentleman. Okay,
yeah, and he was very friendly with the owners of Cherokee Recording Studio, which was a mogul facility. Anybody and everybody either worked there at one time in the industry, that's still in the industry, they had worked there at one time, or they recorded there. And it used to be MGM Studios.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And I think the Osmonds actually owned it, or owned a part of it. I can't recall the whole story, but they sold it to the Robs. Now, the Robs were also out of, like, Northridge Canyon country area. They had a ranch, and that's where their first studio was.
Wow.
Eric's dearest friend, one of his dearest friends, because Dan Stevenson is one of his dearest friends. Craig Cramp, but Dan knows Craig, too. Yeah, it's a little circle here. He was the drummer in their band, the Rob.
I see.
So, you know, all these little...
All these crazy webs and stuff. But I tell you what we're going to do, because this starts another another chapter in your world, and we're talking about now we're getting into where you start stumping into the recording studio worlds and your craziness there, which are the stories are fantastic. What I'm going to do is I'm going to stop down. I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to play some commercials and stuff, and I'm going to play a song for everybody, and then we're going to come back. Okay, so Mickey, don't go anywhere. I'm going to place you on hold for just a minute, baby. Okay,
I promise.
Good deal. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, you're hanging out with me, Dee. This is Radio Memphis Around the World. So you're tuning into Radio Memphis Around the World with me, Dee, straight out of Canada. And what's very cool is that for those of you who are interested in seeing them live again, the next opportunity is going to be September the 23rd. They're going to be at the Music Expo with Sumo Cycle. That is Mississauga Music. They're presenting the Music Expo in partnership with General Mayhem Tickets. And on that particular day, it's going to be Lawless Sons, Tomahawk Love, along with Euphoria and Sumo Cycle, so you have an opportunity to hang out, have some fun, okay, all in Toronto, Ontario. So you guys go do that. In the meantime, for those of you that are hanging out with me right here on this Saturday, August the 26th on Radio Memphis, we're in the middle of a Radio Memphis Road Crew Radio Series interview brought to you by Kimbar Films and Radio Memphis, and we are in the middle of talking to the lovely Miss Mickey Scott. We're bringing her back in. How you doing, baby?
I'm here.
Yeah, I know. I'm so excited. We're in the middle of some cool stories. This is where stuff kind of starts getting really juicy. And again, for those of you who've tuned in, the reason why today is so special is because I get to sit down and talk with a chick, man, and we're getting ready to start throwing some dice on the table, man, and rolling. You know?
Heads will roll.
Heads are going to roll.
Boy, do I have some stuff.
I know you do. Well, we left off at the part where, all right, so you finally were able to ditch the Lady Footlocker gig.
Right. And it was just, even knowing that I didn't have to go back there was brilliant for me. Okay. And so he made a phone call, Eric made a phone call, my husband, to Cherokee Recording Studios. Okay. Just seeing, hey, what's up, touching base. And by the way, you know, she's my wife over here, you know, she's got experience and stuff. Do you need anybody there by any chance? And it just so happened that yes, they did.
Oh, wow.
And it came into the senior brother, D, his wife, she was doing the trafficking. Now, back in those days, this is back in the 80s, okay? So you have to remember, this is when the music business was flourishing. I mean,
absolutely.
This was the pinnacle of it all. It was great. And so most of the bigger facilities had a traffic manager and a regular studio manager.
Okay.
The traffic manager was just there to book the studio.
I got you.
Once the studio is booked, they send the person, the producer, the engineer, whoever's involved, over to the studio manager to get the technical setups, the microphones they want to use, the outboard gear, you know, is it, what kind of a patch bay do you have? It's all technical stuff.
Right.
So she couldn't do it anymore. You know, it's hard working for your husband when you're trying to get a multimillion-dollar business going each
day. Well, absolutely.
So it's stressful. Now, a lot of the studios, they started to realize we don't need two people doing this. Since the manager knows the technical end of it, let's just get rid of traffic managers pretty much, and we'll just use a studio manager for everything.
Of course, and that's where everything gets crazy and hairy.
So this is kind of how it started. But when I came into Cherokee, it wasn't there yet. Okay, I wasn't there quite yet.
Okay.
And they had an accountant, and I was working side by side with the accountant.
Okay.
Because they had other ventures. They did, like, they refurbished yachts. They refurbished tour buses.
Oh.
They had so many things going
okay.
on.
Okay.
This isn't really where I wanted to be. And it turns out that,
well, I mean,
that the accountant was kind of blind.
Okay.
So I guess maybe that's why they stuck me there, because I'm telling you, this guy couldn't see.
So you were there to help him look through everything. And I mean, of course, you know, you bring up, you know, Mickey, you bring up a real funny point when you're talking about all of the different ventures, you know, that the particular studio was involved with. I mean, were they doing all these other things because of interest or because they were wanting to make sure that they had money around?
No, they were smart, actually. The father trained them correctly in a way to don't put all your irons in just one fire.
I got you.
But, you know, stay within the business you know. Because now, with all of the connections that they had through recording, it would make sense to refurbish yachts, to tour buses.
I got
because,
you.
Because, yeah, it's well, who's buying these things?
Right. Those people.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, the people that are recording at their studio or people they know on a yacht or, you know, whatever. So,
right.
Yeah, they were smart. And the father stayed around, too. So, yeah, it was weird in the beginning. But little by little, I was being trained to take over this spot. But just when I finally got there, there was another two girls working with me, too, up there.
Okay.
The executive offices were upstairs. And it was Siobhan, who went on to become studio manager of Sound City.
Oh, wow.
And there was also Kelly. She went on to become manager of Devonshire.
That is crazy.
So, but at this particular moment in time, Kelly had already left. And Siobhan and I, we were out bold kind of day and night, and she came over with a bottle of champagne, and it just so happened that Guns N' Roses was very close to us doing some rehearsing.
Okay.
Near Amigo Recording Studios. It was an industrial area in North Hollywood. So it was about 11 at night, and we hopped in my car, the tuna boat, we called it, and we start going down there. Now, you got to remember, I'm drinking all day at this point, and kind of so was she. So, sure enough, they're doing construction down there. I didn't realize that I'm on the wrong side of the street.
Oh, Jesus.
And this person is flashing their brights at me. I'm like, how obnoxious. Well, it turned out to be Officer Evans and Officer Robinson.
Of course.
Yeah. We both got arrested that night.
Oh, geez.
So I called Cherokee. And because it's open 24/7, you
know. Of course.
So I called Cherokee, and there was really nobody recording at that time, and it was just one of the runners that was manning the phones. I said to him, jump in your car and come down to the North Hollywood, well, no, it was Van Nuys, actually, Van Nuys Police Department. They said that they could let me out on my own reconnaissance, but I need somebody to sign me out. So he jumps in his car. His name's Chad. And wouldn't you know, a few blocks from the police station, he runs a stop sign. He had fix-it tickets, and he gets thrown in jail.
Okay, so your cavalry is now in jail.
Right, I'm collecting all of these people now in jail. Okay, so it didn't stop there, though. And there was an assistant engineer that worked there. He wound up in jail. It was the craziest. I mean,
so everybody you called that was to come and get everybody out, everybody was had tickets, had something going on,
right?
And so all of you were there together. So yep.
But we didn't know we were there.
Oh,
you see, yeah. I mean, I was in a different section,
of course.
Yeah, you know, and they were in a different section. And by the time one of them was booked, they didn't know the other one was in there. And so we're all in there not knowing. I mean, the only one I knew was Siobhan, but she had a friend come bail her out. It was only $400.
Right.
But, you know, well, back then that was a little more money.
Yeah,
but
of course.
Still, she, anyway. So here are the Robs, the brothers and everything, calling the recording studio at like 7 in the morning to get the schedules going, and nobody's answering.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, they can't imagine what is going on. So you wouldn't believe the voicemails. When I finally got home, I had to take a shower immediately. And I'm listening to my voice messages. Oh, my gosh. I said, that's it. I'm fired. You know, we're all doomed.
We're all in trouble.
We're in trouble. So sure enough, we get there, and now they have us upstairs in the offices, lined up on the couch, and they're walking back and forth, talking to us, saying, this is great. So now I guess every time somebody fills out an application to work here, we're going to have to ask, have you been a convicted felon? Have you been in jail? And, you know, this went on and on. And, well, sure enough, most of them were let go, except me. And I kind of felt bad.
Why was this? How did you get out of all of this?
Well, because of the friendship.
I got you.
You see, involved.
You.
So, but they all landed on their feet. So, you know, I felt bad at the time, but they all landed on their feet, so that was great. But after a while, when you are working for a recording studio of that caliber, where you have more than two rooms going, and most of the facilities that I did manage, yes, we did. They were huge facilities. And you have to be available 24/7.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Yeah, there's no vacation for you.
Of course not.
And that's why a lot of people, they just can't deal with it, because their life is turned upside down. So, with my husband being in the business, he knows what it's like, and he's on the road a lot, too.
Of course.
You know, and instead of me going out on the road and just, you know, being a spectator kind of thing, now here I am now helping people make their music.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
roundabout way.
And you were okay with that, though. I mean, because it kept you in the business.
That's right. And it was fine until the beepers came.
Oh.
And it...
Golly. Woo! The beepers, girl.
Yeah, the beepers. And all of the executives and whatever up there at Cherokee, we were given beepers. So I remember Kelly and I, like, looking at each other saying, you know, we don't get any peace as it is. This is going to be horrific. So sure enough... Yeah, the beepers are going off at 2 in the morning and 3 in the morning. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Saturday, mm-hmm. you're out doing something with family and friends, and you're beeped. And you got to remember, we didn't have cell phones.
Right,
remember?
Right.
That whole thing. I keep bringing that up because that was a big deal.
It is a big deal because, you mean, everybody doesn't understand that during that time period, people had to move mountains and move worlds in order to be in places.
On, you know, PCH... taking in the beautiful ocean views, and all of a sudden, you know, you get this thing going off. You know, but you know what? The phones did start back then, actually, and the owners had one, and it was those huge
big clunky, box. Yes.
Yeah, and you had to carry a battery pack with you. You know,
yes.
It was like one of those army type.
It made it look like you were going into the field. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, going to the front lines here. So they had one, and that was the problem. So anytime like they put it down in the, you know, the studio somewhere, we would try to screw it up somehow.
Of course. Of course.
But it got to the point where one Saturday, sure enough, Kelly and I, we are in Malibu, and we're just having a nice time. And we had some drinks, and we're walking on the beach, and sure enough, bing, bing. Mine went off first, of course, then hers. So we just looked at each other. We unclipped our beepers from our belt thing and just threw them into the ocean. And that was the end of it.
That was done.
We just couldn't take it anymore. And of course, where's your beepers? I don't know. So we figured, okay, well, we won't get new ones. Well, no, no. Of well, we just so happened to have some extras. You know, that didn't work.
Of course
but,
not.
Yeah, I didn't stay there much longer because there was an issue that really kind of blew up. And so I said, I can't do this anymore. See, it's not good to work for friends, okay?
Right.
Don't do that if you can possibly help it.
Well, and
don't
that's the thing. Friends. I mean, you know, and as much as, you know, and for those of you that have tuned in, you're in the middle of a Radio Memphis Road Crew radio series interview. And we're talking to Mickey Scott. And, you know, Mickey, you made a poignant, you know, remark in that, how hard it is, you know, because of working with friends and everybody. It seems like that's the easiest thing and the simplest thing to do.
No, it's nice to work with friends, but not for them.
Big difference, okay? Big difference.
And relatives, because mm-hmm. you know, they really expect everything out of you, and no excuses. You know, mm-hmm. you can't call in sick. They know you're not sick.
Right,
so
right.
It's a problem, you know. And so that's why Siobhan, who was in that beginning story, she started working over at Amigo Recording Studios.
Okay.
Now, Amigo, if you think that Sound City had history...
Wow.
Listen, there are a lot of studios out there that have even more history. And Amigo would be it.
Wow.
It was owned by Warner Brothers back in the day.
Okay.
So a lot of the gold, platinum, diamond albums that you see on the walls in that facility were pretty much Warner Brother acts that your mouth would just drop, okay?
Wow.
And I was lucky enough to be a part of that. And Siobhan had called me and told me, hey, listen, Amigo, they need somebody over here. So I came, I was interviewed, there was like three owners, and I got the job.
Okay.
It turned out that Siobhan wanted to go on to become an assistant engineer.
Oh, good for her.
All right. So that's what she decided to do. So I kind of took her place.
I got
and
you.
It didn't work out, unfortunately.
Mm.
She wanted her job back, but she could not get her job back.
Oh.
So here I am getting her arrested.
What is this with you, man? I believe you. I just don't know. You know, at some point in our world, honey, we're going to meet and hang out, and I'm worried. You know,
don't worry, I got you back. But you know, the thing is, if I knew that it was going to be awful, I doubt I would have done that. But she landed a great gig.
Mm.
She was a part of history. She went on to manage, Sound City. So
yes,
it worked
did.
Out. Thank goodness.
She did.
But that facility, Amigo, it was close to home too. It was great. It was in like the NoHo District, which is a very artsy area of North Hollywood, and the studios are there. Universal, Warner Brothers. Yeah, it's the entertainment business completely in that area.
Right.
So it was a blast. And because of the connection of Warner Brothers, we continue to do a lot of work with bands on Warner Brothers as well.
Mm.
Not to mention all of the great engineers and producers that were on their lineups.
Well, sure.
Lee Hirschberg and Ted Templeman and all these great, great guys. You
wow.
know? And when you're working in a recording studio, managing it, you're dealing with A&R up at the labels every day.
I got you.
And it's where the money is. And you kind of have to, you know, schmooze the money out of them. And so, you know, you have to be not only a manager, but you have to be an accountant. You have to wear many hats.
You do have to wear many hats. And that's the thing about, you know, it wasn't necessarily just, you know, for you, you know, Mickey, it wasn't necessarily just managing the day-to-day, but the day-to-day was everything.
Oh, it was everything. And yes, and the configuration of that studio was the wackiest I've ever seen. And you'd have to, like, kind of go through one control room to get to another. It was strange, very strange.
Right.
So there wasn't really that much privacy. But I was sitting off from Studio E Lounge area, and there was a kitchen, you know. Well, we had Bob Ezrin, and he was in there. He was doing three bands at once. So he was running from studio to studio all over the place.
Wow.
We had, it was Julian Lennon in one of the facilities.
Oh, cool.
And it was the Throbs in another. And he was just finishing a project that I can't really recall what it was, but I know he had his plate full. And he also did karate, martial arts.
Mm.
So he turned one of our warehouses into a martial art studio and had the guy come like three times a week to give lessons.
How convenient.
Whoever wanted, you know.
Yeah.
But those are like really the cool perks about getting really cool and known engineers / producers mm-hmm. working in your facility, because it takes months to make an album.
Of course.
So you get to know these people, whereas the road crew guys, they get to know each other, but they're meeting new people every day because
right.
of the venues. It's,
right.
You know what I'm saying? It's
right,
like
right.
it's just a rollover, whereas where I am, I'm stable.
And so you're developing relationships, and you're, you know,
correct.
and that's a huge thing. That's
yes.
a very important thing.
Very, very important. And there were a lot of favors being done back in the day.
Mm.
You know, favors from going to these engineers and producers or to the A&R executives. And, hey, my nephew wants to record a demo. What can you do for me? You know, well, I got this studio down for a couple of days. You know, it's a small studio, so all they have to do is just, you know, pay the assistant engineer $10 an hour. That's it. And you can have it for 2 days.
Right.
Okay. Well, what are you going to do for me? Okay, well, oh, the Red Hot Chili Peppers is playing. You want the VIP treatment? Yes, I do. Okay, you got it. You know, that kind of thing.
Right, right.
All these little favors, one hand washes the other. But now, no. Nowadays, there are no more favors. Everybody has to keep that favor for themselves. And, you know, they're just not the way it used to be.
It's not. I mean, and I think, you know, Mickey, I think one of the things when you and I were talking on the phone the other night, you actually went even deeper.
Yes.
Because you were talking about how when you were having, you know, you were running a studio and, you know, there was other studio managers and everything. And you know, you got, you know, people that are in labels and people that are A&R and stuff. At one point in time, you know, everybody would meet, you know, after hours and stuff and relax and have a good time, have drinks and, you know, have fun. And it was one of those where if you needed something and you're like, hey, I'm overbooked, you would be able to call another studio and they would be like, hey, let me help you out. Let me work with you. And it was back and forth, and it was kind of like feeding each other and feeding the ecosystem, and the other managers weren't necessarily talking about the other managers and, you know, and all
right,
of this.
Right, yes, that's true. The bigger facilities that were well known, there was a camaraderie and there was a code of ethics, and we kept by that. And the best thing is to have, of course, a facility that has both Neve consoles, SSL consoles,
mm-hmm.
and maybe even another, you know, one. Like, one of the studios that I managed had the only Studer board in America.
Oh, wow. Holy
and
smokes.
That was loved by a lot of people, like Mick Gazowski, you know, all these big guys.
Mm-hmm.
Michael O'Mardian loved that board. It's a very warm board, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, you can, if your studio is booked, you mean, you don't want to turn down a good gig, but sometimes you have to. But you don't want them to forget what you can do for them.
Yes.
So I would get on the phone with Tom at the Enterprise, maybe. Hey, you got this facility available, blah, 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 for
mm-hmm.
blah. Yeah, I do. Great, I'll hook you guys up. Because in that way, that producer or engineer will remember that I went out of my way for them. And that is what keeps you in business.
Yep.
So you can't be talking smack about people.
Bingo.
Not in that business.
Bingo. Well,
we'll get back.
I just want you to say it out loud. I just want you to, for those, you know, and this is, and you know, it's funny. This is coming from chicks. You know, don't talk smack. You know,
no.
This is coming from ladies.
Right,
you know,
right.
that everybody
no.
thinks that we like to gossip and stuff. Of course, now let's not to hear to say that. Also, you did mention that
yes.
powwow
okay,
was great.
Yes, when we would get together for happy
here
hour.
Here it comes.
The itche would fly. but it wasn't about us. It wasn't about studios. It wasn't about studio management. It wasn't about people that worked for us.
Sure.
It was about the people that were working in our facility. Okay. So,
right.
And I'll tell you what, there was never a dull moment because you have all these, it's crazy. It was a crazy time. And that's why I did want to touch base on one thing.
What's that?
When you were interviewing Putter and Dan Stevenson,
yes,
there were a couple of things that really stuck out when they said it out loud. And I told you when we were yapping the other day that, you know, I'd like to talk about that a bit. I think it needs to be said.
Okay.
Back in the time when the industry was terrific, it was a fairy tale. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Things were so different when it came to legalities, the litigation. Today, you have to be so careful about anything that you do or even say.
Yeah, you're right.
And there is none of that crazy, let's get a bunch of chicks on the tour bus kind of thing. Or
right.
You can't do it now. There, we live in the land of litigation.
Mm.
And we're smarter about it, however.
Yes, we are.
To protect ourselves.
Of course.
But on the other hand, that's what made the industry so crazy and thrive with stories.
Of course. All the crazy stories also... You know, and I don't want everybody that, you know, that's tuned in to sit there and think that we're, we're encouraging, you know, some misbehavior.
Well, no, not at all.
But it's
a matter of getting sued, and you have
right.
to be careful now.
Right.
So times have changed, and I was even talking to you about, remember going to a concert,
yeah,
or to even a theater concert kind of a thing,
and
yeah, you know, you get backstage passes and you'd be bumping into people back there, rubbing elbows, you know, drinking their booze in the green room. And all that ship has pretty much sailed, too. Because the theaters, they don't want the responsibility of somebody getting hurt back there or getting in the way. Or it's changed a lot. It's become more professional. Let's put it that way.
It has become more professional. And I think, you know, I think also what you're kind of getting at, Mickey, too, and, you know, as much as we're having fun and we're poking fun at a lot of stuff that we talk about, one of the things that gets stifled to an extent is that because everything is so restricted to an extent that people are kind of scared to be creative.
That's true. That's very true. That's so true. They're scared to say what they want to say. They're scared to do any of that. And
right.
Yeah, you know what? That does poke at the creative nerve because, let's face it, that's what it is all about. You know,
it's
you want to be creative. You want to say something to people in your music, or maybe not all the time, but sometimes. And, you know, then you play it back and you say, geez, I don't know, should I say that? Maybe I shouldn't say that. Or, you know, it really hurts.
It does.
It hurts the creative nerve. And it's sad, but it is. It's that way now.
It is that way. And, you know, for you, you've done all these crazy things. You've had all these crazy stories. You know, you have a crazy cool husband, you know, who's in the industry as well. And, you know, and for those of you who tuned in, we've obviously been talking about Mr. Eric Scott, who I'm going to be catching up with for an interview a little bit later on, you know, in the series. One of the things for you, you know, you wound up working, you know, in all of these different studios. And, you know, of course, you did stuff. You also did stuff at Chicago Tracks.
I did. My husband was one of the co-founders of the band, eclectic band Sonia Dada, and
Perfect.
They're based out of Chicago.
Wonderful, wonderful, crazy cool. You want to talk about mixing up a bunch of genres into one? Of course, you know, I got that whole R&B, you know, soul thing that they did, that they pull in on that stuff. So good stuff.
Oh, yeah. It is definitely a pot of everything stirred. So it got to the point where Eric having to go back and forth from L.A. to Chicago.
Mm.
It was kind of getting tired, old. So somebody talked us into moving there.
Okay.
But it just so happened, it was the strangest thing. One of the assistant engineers that started off, and also I just want to say too, around the time that I started in the business here in the recording studios, a lot of the well-known engineers now, like, Jimmy Iovine, who went on, of course, to find Interscope, and
yep.
You know, all these guys, Rob Cavallo, he's another one, Green Day. They kind of all started around the same time I did. They were there a little before me.
Of course.
But we're all around the same age. And so those people, some of them, unfortunately, are gone. They're out of the business. You know,
right.
It's a shame. It really is.
Right.
But, anyway, the whole, you know what? There was one thing, though, I did want to say about Bob Ezrin. Bob Ezrin, like I said, it became a circus at that studio, and Julian Lennon, he would come in at about 10 o'clock every morning, and he would pour his coffee, and he'd put his sugar, milk, or whatever. And like I said, my office was right off the side of that lounge kitchen thing, and
right.
He would start stirring that cup, and all I would hear was clink, 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 and this went on and on and on. Finally, I have a very long fuse, and it could take just one little stupid thing to set me off. That was it. So I remember yelling at Julian about doing that, to please stop it, and I took the spoon out of his hand, and then I got the runner and made him go to the store and buy plastic stirrers.
So you wouldn't have to listen to the spoon.
Yeah, to put out to all of the studio lounges, because I just couldn't take it. In the same day, Bob Ezrin had kind of had it with somebody. And
okay.
I hear this bang, and I'm like, what the heck? And then I see Bob pulling the water cooler across the room, and I said, this can't be right. He put his fist through the wall, and he was trying to hide it with the water cooler.
Like he didn't do it.
Right, exactly. But he was called into the principal's office. And he's just lying like a rug, you know. But he's kind of fessed up, and he says, don't worry, I'll have it fixed.
I'll do it.
It's never a dull moment in these recording studios. It's crazy.
It's never.
And they go morning, noon, and night.
See, yeah. and that's the crazy thing for you. So you wind up again, like I said, because you got to work, Mickey. You got to work, though, in some pretty cool places, and you
yes.
got to work with some very cool artists. And it's so funny because it's, you know, for those that are not in the business and for those that are just, you know, kind of peering and listening in, you know, this was common stance for you. And,
right.
And of course,
right. But
you,
anyway, the assistant engineer that I knew from Cherokee, he became now a full-fledged engineer, Chris
yeah.
Dimitz.
Wow.
And he had to go back to Chicago. His mother was ill, and so he had to deal with that. And he started working at Chicago Trax. Now, Chicago Trax is a huge facility.
Mm-hmm.
It's Chicago Trax and CRC was the other big one. But they did a lot of jingles. That's where, if anybody doesn't know this, jingles, Chicago was known for that. The Windy City was known for doing jingles.
I got you.
But anyway, he had called me, Chris Dimitz called me in L.A. and said, hey, listen, this is kind of really crazy, I know, but Reed, one of the owners, asked me, because he heard that you left Lighthouse Recording Studios,
mm-hmm.
and you're a free agent, and would you come to Chicago? And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So something in the universe is lining up here, you know? And I said, you know what? I'll talk to him. And so he called me, Reed called me on the phone and told me a bit about the facility, which I knew about it anyway, but they were just putting in a new Capricorn board. And at that time, 1997, that was over $1 million board.
That's
right,
that's a huge thing. That was a
yeah,
big deal.
Yeah, it was huge.
Of course, that's a big deal.
It was very cool. But anyway, he talked to me, and I remember him saying, so when can you start? Can you start, like, tomorrow?
So in other words, he wasn't taking no.
Right. And I told him, we have to move. You know, we have to move. We have to find a place to live. He says, you can stay at my house. I'm like, come on now. Let's be adult about this.
But do you know who I have with me?
Right. I mean, come off of it. So therefore, but it did work out. And so here I am now in a strange land and getting to know what is going on at Chicago Trax.
Mm.
And I got lost so many times in that studio when I first went in there. I mean, it's crazy. It's, like I say, it's huge. So it turns out, finally, I get settled in. But I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anything. It was awful. But, you know, you get used to it little by little. And I have to remember that, hey, he wanted me to work there, not the other way around.
Yep.
So that kind of helped. But,
of course.
Yeah, it's kind of hard being, you know, plucked out of your environment. But the reason that he wanted me to do this is because he said that it was becoming crazy over there, and he wanted to bring more of an L.A. vibe into his facility.
Ah.
Well, I have to tell you, looking at the paperwork and stuff that they use, like the work orders on the sessions, they were using, like, construction work orders that has nothing to do with the business of recording.
Right.
Yeah. So I had to actually reconfigure, redo everything to make it make sense. And, you know, they weren't having work orders being signed at the end of the sessions. And so, yeah, I mean, and I had to, like, delegate to people what they needed to do. And so finally, Chris Steinmetz, I said, hey, listen, you're going to be head engineer, okay? This way I can tell you what I need to do, then you can go and deal with all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, there's no way you can get everybody in the room at the same time.
Right.
Now they're doing sessions, or they're the day off. They don't want to come in for a meeting. And so when you're running a big facility like that, it is a 24/7 obligation.
Here we go again. Right.
Yes. And okay, home to R. Kelly, home to Smashing Pumpkins, the list goes on and on.
Mm.
So one particular night, I get a phone call at 3 in the morning that R. Kelly's petty cash has been deleted, which is $400 a night I give them.
Wow.
Now that's a nice petty cash.
Yeah, it is. It's a big little...
It's a huge petty cash.
Yeah, it's a big little nugget there.
So I say, how could they go through that? Again, it's ridiculous. Well, anyway, sure enough, so I get the call at 3 in the morning, and Eric is like, don't tell me, I know. Like, no, you're not going down there. And it was in a crappy neighborhood. It was bad. And so the story goes that R. Kelly, his manager from L.A. is visiting, and their accountant is up there. Now, we're talking about guys that are millionaires plus. They want to order a pizza and they don't have petty cash.
Okay.
So they wanted me
to
get
they
into
call
my car,
you
go to my bank, go to my ATM in the middle of the night, and no. So you need to know when to put your foot down.
Yes.
Now if I forgot to give them the petty cash, it'd be a different story.
Of course.
It's my fault. But no, this is insane. You have 3 millionaires sitting there, and none of them can afford a pizza? No. So something else more sinister is going on, probably, and I just don't want to know about it. So
obviously.
That's why you have to know when to say no.
There
you
it know? Is.
You need a backbone.
You do need a backbone, and that's the other thing that you kind of ultimately described as far as what you need to do and what you have to have in this business.
Right.
You know?
Right. And yeah, you have to, you know, you have to be sweet when you're supposed to be, but you don't want people walking all over you. And that's hard. That's hard to divide sometimes. But after a while, you start to grow a thicker skin, you know, and, like, even now with Dan and Putter, if you start off working at a theater, let's say, in your hometown, because you may want a career in being behind the scenes, you know,
right,
doing what those guys do. Because
right,
let's face it, without them, there's no show.
No doubt.
It's a big responsibility. And if you start off, you know, maybe you could start off at, you know, in your college, if they have the theater group, you start off, well, you know, just little by little. And then when you think you finally have it down to where you can apply to be a roadie here or to be a technician here or whatever the case may be, that's great. But I just want to say one thing.
What's that?
You won't believe the yelling. Okay. You will not believe the yelling. it's going to go on. So that's why you can't take it too personally.
Yes.
But then again, you can't, like, just brush it off and say, they'll get over it. And especially if you do something that really screwed something up.
Right.
It's a catch-22.
It is a catch-22.
So it takes a special person, really, to live that type of a lifestyle. Now, with me, it's not as difficult. Like I say, once again, I'm home. Mm-hmm. I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not on the road, you know. But for the people like Dan and Putter and Batty and all those great guys, geez, it's amazing they stay married.
They have, I don't know, are they?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, well, some to a certain
some
extent.
Some
of them are, it's sad, some, you know,
right.
stories, but I'm not going to get into that. But,
right.
They have kids, they make it work.
They have families, and they have lives, and they have responsibilities. And, of course, you know, one of the things also, too, you got to remember, Mickey, and those of you that have been tuned in, I've been talking to Mickey Scott, part of the Radio Memphis Road Crew radio series. You also made a thing about, and I've noticed this, that you've always had somebody around you that's been in the business, you know,
yes,
that you
yes,
can, you
and
can
that
refer
helps
to.
A lot. And in fact, I have to be around it 24/7, whether I like it or not.
Hmm.
You know, I don't have a choice unless I just want to say goodbye to my marriage.
Well, there's that, you know.
But because of Eric, you know, he does his solo stuff when Sonia Dada is on hiatus, and they have a very long hiatus this past time around because the other founding member is making a real movie.
Wow.
And so that, you know, makes Eric very itchy. He needs to be doing music, so, and that's another thing, you know, there a lot of the producers, engineers, and even musicians, we all have little studios in our house now, or our garage, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, for a studio to stay in business, it's very difficult, believe me. Although, things are starting to kind of turn around a bit.
They are.
You know, which I hope is going to happen.
Of course.
But it's a shame that some of these great facilities had to close their doors. And it's a shame, you know. In fact, every one of them that I knew or have been a part of or visited, they're gone.
Wow.
You know, there's condominiums in its place. It's such a shame.
That kind of hurts. That kind of hurts, you know.
But anyway, I'm around it all the time. So, and when I'm not around it all the time, I still kind of am because now I'm doing music videos on the side.
Good for you.
Yeah, I mean,
good
just
for
keep
you.
Myself busy and doing all of that stuff. But yeah.
Because you're not out of it because, I mean, after it was all said and done, you're doing the videos on the side. You're doing some promotion stuff on the side. You're also kind of stepping into kind of working with an artist here or there, you know, and steering their careers.
Well, also with Eric, you know, I'm dealing with some of his stuff, too.
Absolutely.
In fact, I'm doing a video for him right now, Women of Avalon, it's called. And so, you know, that's like, you know, frame by frame animation is no Day at the Beach, but.
No.
It's fun when it's done. But yeah, and I had no training in it whatsoever.
See.
I just took tutorials, you know, on YouTube and learned how to use Photoshop and all that stuff.
And you told me that, and I was like, okay, oh my God, there's hope. I can do this.
Yeah, no, it really is. It's very intimidating when you first look at it, you know, the software and stuff. But after a while, you know, you get it. It's not that difficult, really. It isn't. But yeah, so between Eric doing all of that stuff, and we have a studio in our house. But you were right about the Pro Tools. We discussed that where people tend to make music sound the same.
Yep.
Because you're not using a facility with all of this great outboard gear and all of the big, nice consoles.
And the experience that comes behind the people that know what to do with that stuff.
Right, exactly. So that kind of hurts, too, a bit. And you do. You really kind of have to think outside the box. And that's one thing I have to say about Eric. He does. He likes to make music that you don't usually hear on the radio.
None.
So I'm busy with him and also publishing, you know, dealing with his publishing.
Good for you.
And all of that. So it's still, believe me, I'm very busy. And on top of it now, my band, Rot Violent.
Yes.
It's a new metal band. And, oh, my gosh, we're going to have so much fun because guess who's a part of this?
that be?
Yeah, well, nice dance.
Yeah.
No, anyway, it's great. And I'm so, so happy and privileged to be working with him again. And
that's
he's
awesome.
Got such great ideas. And I really think that this is going to be, it's going to be great. I think it's going to be a great adventure for all of us.
It should be. And it's kind of funny how your world, did you notice in this whole conversation that we had, Mickey, that it came full circle?
Right, exactly. Isn't that strange? Because now the last time Dan, like I say, he was one of Eric's worst men at the wedding.
Of course.
And even still, we were videotaping the wedding. The drummer from Alice Cooper, Jan Uvina, he was filming it. But you can hear Dan in the background. The light's not right over there. Can't you see? He's like directing Jan how to do this right. And
it came by it naturally, okay? He came by it honestly.
He did. But it was 1982 when we got married. Oh. And so, but I think it probably, the last time I physically saw Dan was in 1996-ish. Because we left for Chicago in 97.
Yeah.
So I have not seen Dan personally all of this time.
Wow.
So, this is like a reunion that, oh my gosh, the stories are going to fly.
Of course they are. Of course they are. And I tell you what, when you get everything ready, and of course, you know, I do the metal show on Monday nights and stuff like that. So when you get those, you know, when you get the band ready for some stuff, you know, that we'll help you here.
I'm really looking forward to this. And it's going to be a long haul. Don't get me wrong. This is not just, okay, we're ready to go.
Right.
We have a lot of work to do ahead of us, my husband's not really too thrilled about it.
What's that? What is that? Come on, Eric.
Well, like I say, two musicians in this family might not work.
Well,
but it's not that I'm really going to be doing that part of it, But, I'm going to have to be around, and home base is going to probably be out of Las Vegas.
See?
So, but then again, that's just a hop and a skip and a jump for me anyway. So, it's not like I'm going around the world, but I hope to.
You will.
To go around the world with this band. That would be great.
You will. It's going to be fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
It's going to be great
but
stuff.
It'll be great to see those guys again. I can't even tell you the last time I saw Putter. And, those two, especially, Putter and Dan, when they're together. It's a riot.
It is. Putter sent me a message this morning, and he knew that I was going to be on air with you today, and he wanted me to tell you, he said hello.
Oh, well, hello, Putter.
Yes.
Love you. I love all you guys.
So,
I miss you.
Yeah.
So this will be great, And, I think it's about time maybe for the industry to get back to the way it used to be. It'll never happen exactly.
No, but if we get guys like you and girls like you, I should say, and everybody else that that kind of remembers the parts that worked and the parts that were cool, because you guys were part of the pioneers that made it all work in the beginning.
That's
anyway.
Right. That's true, and right, so we can learn from our mistakes and try not to repeat that. but then again, but listen, hey, those days, let's face it, they're a little bit different in other ways, too.
Of course, of course. But, hey.
We would be dead. We would be dead. I remember telling you about Rose Mann. Now, Rose Mann, she was the manager. She was the mother of all managers in Los Angeles. She managed the record plant. Now, the record plant, that I don't think will ever die.
No, it won't.
It's such history there, too. And she started there. She really built up a great business for the record plant.
Wow.
And it was because of her.
Wow.
And
she's one that we need to talk to.
Kind of, I think she's about maybe part owner of it now or something. I don't know if I have the story straight, maybe not.
Okay.
But she is definitely someone to talk to because the stories that she has, oh my.
That's the next one.
Mm-hmm.
We need to wrap her into this business and stuff
and
talk with her.
She is married to Ed Cherney, who is a very well-known engineer, producer. I mean, he's done everybody. It's mm-hmm. great. And they're the most fun couple you could ever want to be around.
Love it.
You know?
Love
it's
it.
It's just, the party never dies with them.
Love it.
So,
absolutely. Well, then I must talk to her too, because she's the mother of all managers.
She is. And like I say, any time when I first started over at Cherokee, and even it bled over a couple of times when I went to Amigo, where Eric could not answer my question because it was a little bit out of his domain.
Sure.
You know, I didn't know what to do. Well, call Rose. And believe me, I was not the only one doing it. So she would get phone calls from me sometimes, and what do I do? And she would walk me through it and say, hey, you know. So then I would say to the person, well, here's the way to do it, and then they do it. And if they still got mad at me, I'd say, well, Rose told me to do it that way. And then they changed their tune. Oh, Rose, ooh, you know, okay, I get it.
That's the
so
one.
She was good. She was a good person to be around back then.
Well, then that will be what will have to happen in the, you know, and make that work.
And but I think what we should do is I think I should interview you.
Me? What did
you? Well, you're behind the scenes, kind of thing.
I am. I don't have any cool stories.
Yes.
Well, yeah. It just depends on. Well, I mean, it depends. I know.
We should put you in the hot seat.
I know. And this is so funny because everybody sits there. Well, we want to know kind of some of the stuff that you've gotten into. I mean, I tell everybody the same story. It's you know, I never meant to do this. I never meant to be in this business. I got railroaded into it. I got thrown into the, you know, being on the air. And, you know, I've done everything from scale, you know, roofing ladders to go on top of buildings while it's thunder and lightning, you know, to do live broadcasts, you know, of a guitar drop in the middle of New Year's Eve to rock stars. And I mean, yeah.
So you have stories. So come on now. So I think when I get off the phone with you, I'm going to call Dan. And I think we're going to corner you. How do you like that?
Oh, you guys are absolute crazy, crazy cryptid bunch is what I think.
Listen, it's a great business.
It is.
It really is.
You
just learn so much, and it really does apply to your everyday life in a way. Like I say, if you can stay strong and you can stand it, and you have to be around people that understand you.
Yes.
Okay. You know, that this is really what you want to do. But it's going to be a rough few years to begin. And as long as they understand that, then you don't have to walk on eggshells.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
That's like the one thing that I do tell anybody is that, listen, they have whoever you're attached to at home, they need to understand that this. See, that's why I do not have many friends. When I mean friends, I mean outside of this business.
Absolutely.
Because they don't get it.
They don't understand.
I don't have the time to sit there to try to explain it to them.
That's it. And I understand when you made that statement, I don't have the time to explain it to you. It's like, look, if you just don't understand what this means or what this is or what it's about or what I'm doing, it will take me longer to explain to you than it is for me to get to the next level where I'm at. So
that's true. And it's not just the recording studio I'm talking about. I am talking about wearing all of the hats to make this industry what it is.
Yep.
And, you know, you go from publishing, you know, to recording, to live gigs. You know, I mean, I've toured also, you know, with Alice Cooper, with my husband, but and Sonia Dada, and Kiss, and all of those guys. And you learn as you go,
you know? Do learn as you go.
But at least I had somebody that was a part of it, you know, so it made it much easier.
Big difference.
So that's why, you know, it is. It's really important that you have somebody rooting you on, you know.
Absolutely.
But the only outside friends I have are down at the stable where my horse lives.
See?
You know?
And that's it. And you have to have that too. And there's Mickey, there is something to be said for that.
Yes.
There's something to be said for
that. Sometimes you have to give yourself a break, you know, and that's what I do. I get in my car, I blast my you know, stereo, get down to the stable, hop on my horse, and whomever I'm with, I don't have to talk about the music business because they don't have a clue.
There it is.
So that's why you do need a little bit of an outlet once in a while.
You do.
Yeah, but it is. It's really a great business if you can do it. It's great. And I really encourage people to do that.
I am so glad. I am so glad that we had this time, honey. You know, and you know, you have been, you and I have become very fast friends.
Yes, we have.
And I adore you. I appreciate.
Oh, well, I adore you too.
I appreciate.
See,
you
this
so,
is the girl chat.
It is, this is the girl. This we get to talk like this. We get to twirl our hair.
Flip our hair.
I know, yeah. Right? Yeah, I'm playing with my hair too. Yeah. See. All right, we're good.
Yeah, you saw what I look like right now. Holy smokes.
That's the beautiful thing about this doing thing radio stuff. Yeah, nobody has to know. You don't even have to bring that up. You're hot, man.
Yeah,
please
don't ever do like a Skype interview.
We're not doing that. Oh, we're not doing that.
Maybe for the guys it's not so bad, but.
Oh, geez. I did throw some sunglasses on and a hat and they're done. Damn them. Just damn them. Well, listen, baby.
It's a long time. And when I go back and I look at it and I say, geez, I've been in this business now for over 30 years. And
yeah, you have.
It just does not seem possible.
Mm-mm. Because you've enjoyed it.
Well, I have to admit, some of it's a blur.
Some of it's really? A blur, but you know what? It's been fantastic. It's been fantastic. You had a fun time.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, at least I can say that. And I do have my memories, and I do try to save all of my, you know, backstage passes and all that stuff. And, yeah, you never know, right? And it's just kind of fun once in a while to go back and look at all this stuff because it does jog your memory.
Of course it does.
Yeah, then you can just start saying, oh, my gosh, you know, and then you reach out to people. But the thing is, you know, back then we didn't have social media either.
No, you didn't.
So now it's so much easier to connect.
Now it's so much easier and so much better.
Make sure, because I don't know how many times I have been on LinkedIn. Yeah, I don't go there anymore, but LinkedIn is one of the biggest places to get scammed.
Yes.
Because they think that, oh, well, LinkedIn, you know, hey, these are real people and this is what they do. No, it's not. And there are bitter people that did not make it in this business and what they do. And I know a couple of them. And believe me, I read them the Riot Act about it. But what they would do is open up these companies, you know, saying that, hey, we'll get your songs out there and, you know, we'll do all of this. And
yes.
And it's just a scam. All it is they want your money to re-record your stuff, which they don't really even do that. They may, you know, put in a few effects or something.
Maybe.
And that's it. You never hear from them again.
Maybe. And so that's it.
If you're paying somebody to do something, there's something not right there.
Bingo.
You know what I mean?
Bingo.
Not in the beginning. No. They should be soliciting you, not the other way around.
Bingo. Say you so said it. You
be very careful it. About that. And they are a dime a dozen out there now, everywhere.
Girlfriend's full of info. And say, we're going to have to do a couple check-ins with you from time to time, you know, to get some tips and tricks
well,
and everything else.
You can do that.
That's going to happen. Yeah, I'm going to work this in with you. What I am going to do, though, is I'm going to play a song. And I've got some stuff because I got another band that's going to be calling in here in a few.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to let you enjoy your afternoon. Baby, thank you. Everything
oh,
you've ever
welcome.
Done. Thank
you're
you welcome. So much for your time. And,
yeah, no
and for,
problem.
And for, your,
fr-
and
anytime,
for your friendship.
Yeah, you want to do an update? Well, we'll talk after.
Yeah. We'll talk. No, yeah. Me and you, we're gonna get on the page about something. I have a feeling, yeah, because I love the way that you're just going to put it out there. So, yes.
Right. And
yes.
Dusty Rhodes. She's another one.
She's another one. Yes, we got.
Maybe I should have Dusty Rhodes interview you.
No, oh my God, are you kidding? She'll put me on the block.
That would be great. One DJ to another. That would be actually pretty good.
It would be actually very good and stuff. And we, you know, that'll turn out into be something you know that's quite you know quite the series when it's said and done. So
yeah, you never know, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but she's another great gal to talk to. Oh, boy, she's got stories too.
Well, we'll do it. We'll do it all. Listen,
all right.
You give my love to Eric.
I will.
And honey, you and I will catch up here in the next day or so and stuff, and we'll see what else we can rattle up between each other.
You got it. All right.
All right.
Go Pirate Radio Memphis.
We'll talk soon, baby.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved, and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.